Now boarding, the official boarding area podcast would like to welcome aboard all listeners. This nonstop service includes interviews, reviews, and insights from our talented crew of bloggers. Episode number 8 is now boarding.
Joining Captain Ed Pizza in the cockpit on today's episode is Tiffany Funk from the blog One Mile at a Time. Make sure those tray tables are stowed, your seats are in the upright position. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in for another episode of the Now Boarding Podcast. I'm hanging out still in Washington, D.C. at Frequent Traveler University, and today I have my friend Tiffany Funk on from One Mile at a Time. Hey, Tiff, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I am doing awesome. I'm glad to get a bunch of time to record with a bunch of folks that I know while we're hanging out in town, and you and I have been trying to catch up for probably 3 or 4 months, and we never seem to find ourselves anywhere near each other geographically, and we finally get to catch up in person.
I know. It's so nice.
It is nice. And so while we've had all kinds of other fun conversations, now we get to talk about you and mostly you. And I'll make some jokes along the way because I'm me, but we get to find out all kinds of interesting things about Tiffany.
Oh, boy.
It won't be too bad, guys. I promise. So let's get started with where you got your love of travel from. What was it that made you want to start traveling?
So I have always loved travel. I basically grew up in the right-hand seat of a cockpit. All the men in my family were pilots or somehow involved in aviation. My grandfather flew B-52s during the Cold War. So there was always just that love of being in the air and aircraft and airplanes. And I, from a very, very young age, I would go flying with my dad. And so I just love being in the air.
I love that.
So a lot of my love from travel, especially as an adult, has just come from, I just want to go somewhere. Like, I just want to be on a plane. I don't even care where we're going. I don't care if it's a nice plane. And of course, like, now we start talking about the 1 mile at a time angle, and like, I definitely prefer the nice planes, but yeah. I'm super happy in a Q400, the window, just looking out and watching the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So your dad was he a naval pilot or was he a professional?
My dad was just a private pilot.
Okay.
So that was still very, very fun as a kid.
Yeah, that's really awesome. So I didn't fly in a small plane like that till I was probably in my 20s. I really didn't understand that part of the aviation world. It's interesting that you sort of grew up cutting your teeth in like small planes.
Yeah, it was. And it was really interesting. I mean, the first job that I remember wanting to have as a kid is I wanted to be an air traffic controller.
Oh, wow.
Because like as a little girl, you sort of revere your dad, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, he's like, oh, you know, like, it's your dad. And there's so much that he can do, and he's really awesome. And then there's these people who get to tell him what to do.
Yeah.
And very competently and directly and very calmly, and it's like, can you do this? And like, you hear him like asking things like, these are the most powerful people in the world.
Yeah.
And I want to be one of those people. Yeah. That's so cool.
So your dad took you out on private, and then when did you start traveling to explore the world? How old were you when you started seeing the world?
I mean,
or the country, wherever you
the
started.
Country. Well, my parents did get divorced when I was younger, and so I would fly back and forth a lot.
Okay.
And so then that was always interesting, and they also both liked to travel. Like, my parents loved to travel, and so I was lucky from a young age. We would take some family trips, and we would sometimes do like the Disneyland trips, which were fun, but
sure.
We would also sometimes we took a trip like over Christmas one year where my dad took us to like Scotland and London, and just going through and tromping through castles and stuff like that. And again, it was like a fun age where like, oh, we're climbing over like rocks and ruins, and oh, princesses lived here. Like, it was they did a really good job of finding the things that would inspire kids to be interested in sort of the bigger world rather than just necessarily things that were close.
Were you flying back and forth on your own when you were going back and forth with your parents, or would one of them come
with you? Yeah, I was actually a top tier United Elite when I was 7.
Wow.
As an unaccompanied minor, and it was so fun because they flew 7-4s between San Francisco and Honolulu at the time, and so you'd connect, and then you'd like get upgraded, and you get to go upstairs, and it'd be like me and my little sister and like all these business travelers.
Oh, that's so cool. 7-4. That's so cool. And they're looking around going, hey, where's your dad? And you're like, oh, he's somewhere else right now.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know.
That's great. That's awesome. So I know you're involved in a lot of the behind the scenes stuff with One Mile at a Time, but you also write. How long have you been writing about travel?
It's probably only been a few years where I've been actively writing about travel on the 1 mile at a time side. I love talking about the tips and tricks and things like that for people to get the most out of their miles. What I actually love doing the most is writing about the travel experiences and the trip reports and I used to write when we lived abroad. I would just write letters like to my mom or things like that, or to my friends about the stuff we were doing. And I like translating that experience into stuff for when I have time. Unfortunately, I don't have a ton of time to write about about my travel. And so that's always time. I'm like, oh my gosh, like we had such a great trip last year. We went to the Basque region. And I want to tell people about it and, you know, share those experiences. And then it's I just run out of the time to write about the travel.
Yeah, and you do have some great travel. How much traveling would you say you're doing right now on an annual basis?
This year will be a little bit less, just because we have like a new puppy and things like that, and you have to stay home, otherwise they get into stuff. But generally, I'm flying about 250,000 miles a year, about 150 nights in hotels.
Keep in mind, folks, she just said she was going to travel a little less this year.
This year's way less.
Way less. It's probably only like 150,000.
Yeah. Anything at all.
Show of hands for everybody listening who's flying more than 150,000 miles a year. Look, there's not a lot of hands raised. So where do you find yourself traveling this year? Like, what are some upcoming destinations that you have?
Most of what I've done this year, there's been a lot of domestic back and forth. Just, I know you can relate.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes where life takes you.
Well, you guys moved just about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably some relocation stuff there too.
Always that fun stuff and seeing family. This year I have been to the UK a couple of times for some various things, and coming up we have a lovely Emirates first trip that we're doing with some friends where we will spend a couple days in Dubai and then a couple days in Milan.
Wonderful.
So that'll be nice.
I love it. Two great cities, and I have not been to either yet.
Really?
I haven't. Yeah. They're on the list with a lot of others.
I mean, neither of them are my favorite tourist destinations,
sure,
to be honest. But they, you know, there's nowhere I don't want to go, even places I've been before that I didn't particularly enjoy. There's still so much out there to experience and enjoy, and like, there's always something.
Yeah, Italy's one of my favorite countries. I think one of the reasons why I haven't been to Milan is exactly how you framed it. It's not necessarily the first place people choose to go in Italy.
Right.
It's fine. I think it's geared a little more towards business, and there's plenty – like, I might do it as a jumping-off region, but I think there's plenty of places in Italy that I've loved visiting that I go back to again.
Yeah, again and again and again. You have better luck in Italy than I do, because when I drive in Italy – we've talked about this, and Ed's laughing because he knows where I'm going with this.
I do.
There's like the parking ticket situation,
mm-hmm,
and we lived in Italy for a couple of years, and we're still getting random parking infractions – or moving violations, but I think it's very different Sicily than other parts of Italy.
It definitely is. And I think, you know, we've got to do a Miles to Go segment where we just trade those stories, because I have a really great story about Venice and a ticket situation on one of the Vaporettis. But we'll save that for when you and I can swap war stories on a segment.
Sorry for sidetracking.
No, it's great. I love those. I love those sorts of stories, and I think that's why you and I get along so well, is because we have these sort of outsized things that happen with travel. But from what I see, and certainly I haven't been with you when you've had one of these things happen, but I just think that you're – like when the thing happens, you're pragmatic about it and you figure it out, and then you're able to compartmentalize it. But you just have a great way of like turning it into a comedy when you tell folks about how it happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's life, right?
Yeah,
I think you have to be – strong and pragmatic in the situation, because when you're traveling, especially if you're traveling like as a single female traveler,
sure,
like you have to be pragmatic and you have to keep your head on and you have to just work through it, right? You just got to work it out, whatever it is.
You have to be confident, and you're not going to get through it.
Exactly. And then just in life, you have to laugh at yourself.
You do, but so many people don't. And that's why I say, like, when we hear stories, like, I know that you've had these experiences that were either troubling or harrowing or whatever it was. And then, like, to hear you retell it, it really does become, like, the punchline.
Right. I mean, of course, because it makes it so much more enjoyable. You know, I was telling this story in a session yesterday, but, you know, last winter, we were going to New York from Southern California,
mm-hmm,
and we had tickets to Hamilton when it was like a big thing. I know you raise your eyebrows at me, but I did not pay as much as you think that I did. And in fact, I had extra tickets, and I came out at a profit for my Hamilton situation. But there were weather delays and things like that with New York, and everybody was so stressed. They're like, oh my gosh, like I'm not going to be able to get there for 2 or 3 days. And my husband was like, oh, you waste all this money, and you know, our family was there, and blah, blah, blah. I was like, no. So instead of flying LA, New York, we're just going to fly LA, Dublin, Frankfurt, New York, and we'll get there at the same time. It'll be fine.
Okay, folks, just break that down for just a second. She decided to go from L.A. to Dublin.
On Ethiopian. I feel like that's an important part of the
story. I do think that is an important part of the story. Hey, guys, Ethiopian flies between L.A. and Dublin. And then because that wasn't far enough out of the way, she went further out of the way to Frankfurt. And then from there, doubled back to New York, because that's how we all get to New York from L.A., right?
Well, we had to go to Frankfurt to get back to New York. There wasn't a return space Dublin to New York. I wasn't being ridiculous. It was very pragmatic. It was in the moment. It's like, here's what we do.
Very pragmatic. Well, on that note, we're going to step away for our first break. We'll be back to talk a little bit more about the things that Tiffany's an expert on and what you can rely on her for. And we'll obviously finish up with some lightning questions, find out what her favorite things are. We'll be right back on the Now Boarding Podcast. The Now Boarding Podcast is brought to you in part by Norwegian Air. Norwegian is one of the fastest growing airlines in the world. The low-cost carrier is based in Europe and continues to connect cities that have never been connected before. Their most recent flights include nonstop service from Florida to Rome, Madrid, and Stockholm. They've also launched new service from Montreal to the Caribbean and from the Toronto area to Dublin. With a fleet of brand new 787 and 737 MAX airplanes, they're making the world affordable for thousands of travelers. And we're back on the Now Boarding Podcast with Tiffany Funk from One Mile at a Time. And Tiffany, you know, you and I have known each other long enough. We've been to a bunch of different seminars together, and I see you speak on all kinds of different topics. So I really, if somebody asked me what it was you could help them with, I think I'd probably say everything. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's too broad of an answer. But if folks are thinking about, you know, hey, I want to reach out, I have a question, what sorts of things, you know, would you say are things that you could help them with?
That's a great question. I think part of it speaks to the general approach that we try and take at One Mile at a Time in general. And Ben's whole philosophy is always how to help people find ways to experience luxury and aspirational travel for less.
Yeah.
And what luxury looks like for everybody is different. You know, some people want really fancy hotels. Some people want just a couple days to disconnect. Or for some people, aspirational is, you know, these really amazing, ridiculous, you know, airplanes where you're taking showers and, you know, mm-hmm. all of that, and it's amazing. Other people, it's, well, I just want to be able to take my kids to go and see grandma over Thanksgiving without spending $2,000.
Yeah.
So I think because of that, it does become very broad.
Yeah.
And in general, then I would say, I know it's like, in general, my expertise is being in general, but it's it's helping people find those pathways through. Like, what are your travel goals? What is it you want to do? Why should you even care about miles and points? How does this apply to your life and your situation?
Yeah.
Okay, let's take that. Here's the best pathway through for you.
Yeah.
You know, for some people, it's going to be taking advantage of credit card offers. For some people, it's going to be looking at, you know, different alternatives just based on their situation, what they want to do.
So a little bit of a curveball question. I just thought about it, and I don't actually know the answer to this one, even though you and I know each other really well. But before you were part of One Mile at a Time, you know, what did your travel look like? So you're an adult, you know, not your, when your kid travel, like flying back and forth on your own from San Francisco to Honolulu as a top tier executive, which I love. but like, what did your travel look like, say, you know, after that?
Well, in college, as I was working through college, I worked as a makeup artist, which required a lot of up and down travel mm-hmm. through the coast.
Okay.
And so, like, lots of short regional travel. And then as I was working beyond that and working in a corporate job, I had that same gorgeous corporate travel that we all love, mm-hmm. where it's like, let me put the phone book under the alarm clock so when I roll over in the middle of the night, I know what city I'm in.
I love that. Back when phone books used to be in hotel rooms.
Right. And I'm not that old, but I do really miss the lack of phone books in hotel rooms
because
that was really helpful. And doing that. And then with my husband's job, he started taking contract assignments overseas.
Mm, okay.
And so we would be in a situation where we would often be 3, 6, 9 months in random places.
Oh, wow.
Which was really enjoyable. I mean, that's why we spent so much time in Sicily and then other places, because he'd be going out there for intervals of time. And I just sort of shifted my life so that I could go along, because if, you know, somebody comes home and says, I'm going to Sicily for 3 months, I don't say, have a nice time.
Right.
Obviously.
Right. Yeah. I'd like to come have a nice time with you.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a lot of that. And I think that those really immersive and intense experiences are something that I still try and look for on shorter trips.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously a very different experience when you spend like 3 months living on an island off the coast of Sicily where like nobody speaks English, because while it's a touristy town in the summer, it's touristy for like Northern Italians and other Europeans, not for Americans at all.
Yeah.
And just the experiences that you have there. And it's very different than when you're flying into a city or, you know, doing a week in a hotel and things like that.
So you were a corporate traveler for a little while, and was it the sort of thing where you were doing enough travel where you had status on airlines and hotels?
Definitely with hotels, okay. Especially then, you know, at one point we moved to the East Coast, and as you know, you don't, if you're doing stuff up and down the East Coast, you're on the train a lot more than you're on the plane.
Yep.
So a lot of that, but I did hotels and status and points before I did anything really extravagant with airlines. We really maximized Southwest in like 2007, 2008.
It
was a great time. They gave you like double credits for booking online because nobody else was using the internet.
And that was like, back when 16 one ways would get you a free flight.
Yeah, and it was double credits as well because we signed up when we were in college. You know, in order to get from D.C. to Portland, you had to go through Midway. You may still have to go through Midway.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, if you book the D.C. to Portland, like, that just counts for one. But if you book D.C. Midway and then Midway Portland and
just it's two.
Hope that there's no connection. So it was like it was buy one, get one free trips, basically.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, no, the connections in the D.C. area have gotten better on Southwest. It's still – I still feel like a – you know, west of the Mississippi, I love that airline. East of the Mississippi, it's very situational where you live.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But this will be fun for One Mile at a Time readers because they wouldn't expect anybody to be talking about Southwest being a great program.
Newsflash for folks that know Tiffany, but didn't know Tiffany, that she's a closet Southwest fan. So back when you were doing that travel, did you have a go-to hotel chain back then?
A lot with SPG at the time, a lot with Starwood. It just made sense.
Yeah.
I feel like corporate travel is not always based off of what you'd like to do. It's based off of footprint and where you have to be.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and I think some of that is generational too. In that, you know, my first corporate travel was in the '90s, and so you know, SPG wasn't really around then, and so I focused more on like IHG. Back then, it was Six Continents, and like my dad before that was more of a Hilton guy because again, that was the big footprint. It was just Hilton and Marriott.
Right, and sometimes
back then.
It's the corporate contracts and things like that. So you know, when I started working with Ben for One Mile at a Time, like at that point in time, even before I was doing anything, you know, formally as like, this is my job to do travel stuff.
Yeah.
You know, between my husband and I, we had top tier status in all the hotel chains just because, you know, his corporate contracts versus my corporate contracts. And
right.
Like we were spending stupid amounts of time in hotels.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, well, we'll get to that in a bit. We're going to get to favorite hotel chains, but I don't want to tease that one too soon. But that's probably a great place for us to step away for our final break. We'll be right back with Tiffany to hear some of her favorite things on the Now Boarding Podcast. The Now Boarding Podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. There are flight crews, sports teams, and business executives all around the world that sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today. And we're back to wrap up the Now Boarding Podcast this week with Tiffany Funk. We're going to spin through some lightning questions to find out some of her favorite things. I don't know the answer to most of these, even though I know her real well, so I'm super keen on her answers. And she probably thinks that there are right or wrong answers as she looks at me. But there's no right or wrong answer. I don't think so. Unless you say your favorite airline is Southwest. And then there's a whole bunch of people that read 1 mile at a time. And they're going to go, wait, hold on, what? So anyway, what's one of the coolest destinations you've ever visited?
Oh, gosh. So I love so many things about so many places, but two that always stand out. I love the islands of Malaysia.
Okay.
It's beautiful. You should actually take your kids to Langkawi. They would love it. It's primeval rainforest.
Yep.
It's gorgeous. The people are so friendly. The food is amazing. And it's really low-key and relaxed, and like not a lot of people go there. They'll go to Thailand, you know, the beach is there, and nobody really necessarily thinks of the islands of Malaysia.
And so I've also heard it's very affordable. Like the dollar goes fairly far there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's great, and people are so – it's very welcoming culture, and really, really loved that. And then we went to Jordan a couple years ago, and I loved that. You know, we drove through the desert, we went camping, we, you know, had fabulous conversations over a fire with, you know, groups of Bedouin, and it was just lovely.
I feel like I saw some of those pictures from your trip.
That's one I actually did successfully write about in great detail. It might be the last trip report I've done even. Ben, it was great. And I think so many people are hesitant to go to certain regions of the world right now.
Sure.
And I just named two that most people wouldn't go to.
Yeah.
And they're well worth it. And they're not always the most advertised places.
Sure.
And I think there's some amazing opportunities there.
Yeah, and I think that brings up an interesting follow-up question about places in the world that people might not be comfortable going to. As you say, you picked a couple of places that don't pop up at the top of the list. And I don't necessarily think of Langkawi as a place that might not be safe. But if we say that Jordan is maybe somewhere on the fringes, what was it that got you comfortable to go there?
It's interesting because about a week before we were going to go to Jordan, they had a little bit of a terrorist incident in one of their towns, mm-hmm. and everyone was like, oh my gosh, you have to cancel your trip, blah, blah, blah. And that's not me. Like, I don't,
sure.
you know, generally, I feel like whenever a country has had some kind of an incident, then that's a good time to go because everyone's on a high alert. And
right.
so, of course, like, we were road tripping through Jordan. There were tons of security checkpoints and, like, yeah. lots of people wanting to see our passport, and it was practice their English. And, you know, like, it was fine. It was a really good experience. So, in general, the approach that I take, I like to look for openness about the situation.
Right.
So if there, and this is probably everybody takes different approaches, but I feel like if everyone is on the same page in terms of what's going on in a country, whether there's conflict happening there or not, like if it's being openly communicated and there's like a free media who's allowed to report on incidents, then I feel like you can educate yourself and make decisions as to, okay, yeah. this is a good place to go. Like I have no problem going to Egypt a few years ago. Now I'd be a little bit more hesitant in some ways because I'm like, are we getting enough information to be able to make good choices?
That's kind of how I feel about Turkey right now.
Exactly. And Turkey is someplace I've always wanted to go. I'm like, but I don't know that I can make that an informed decision
right.
given the constraints that are being put on the information that's coming out of that country right now.
Yeah, I agree. I had a trip planned right before things started to get bad, and there was a terrorist attack, and I ended up ultimately canceling the trip, mostly because my wife was uncomfortable and I didn't want to put her in the position of being uncomfortable while I was gone. And then the situation has degraded significantly since, and it's one of those places that has just so much history and so much beauty, and I so badly want to get there. But I think you bring up a really good point, which I didn't really connect, even though I know it was a big factor in my decision, which is, are we getting accurate information about the actual circumstances on the ground in Istanbul?
Right, right. And that's sort of, I mean, I don't know that that's the best advice for other people. That's just the approach that I generally take is like, do I feel like I can get enough information to where I can make a decision confidently one way or the other? And if
yeah.
I can't, you know, then maybe I'll save this trip for a different time.
Yeah, and I think given our lifestyle of wanting to travel a lot, I feel like I'll be older when I finally get to Istanbul. But I do feel like, and I'm guessing you do too, like, okay, there will be a time that I'll be able to go.
Yeah, yeah. And in general, I don't feel like I'm overly cautious about safety things. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of cities that I'm happy to go to by myself. As a single woman, I'm happy to take my nieces, mm-hmm. places that other people might think are controversial.
Yeah.
And I think it's sort of important to do and to sort of understand what are actual risks versus what are made up risks versus
sure.
what is just people who maybe don't have a great understanding of the world and their biases that they're communicating and portraying as risks.
Yeah. All right. Well, shifting topics, let's cover some of
your somber note.
Yeah, I don't think that's somber. I think it's very eye opening because I think a lot of people shy away from places where there's a little bit of trouble because they feel like it's better to be safe than sorry. And I do think without sounding sexist at all, I do think that there is a quote unquote difference for a single female going to certain places in the world just because of perceived prejudices. And I think if you're a single woman and demonstrate confidence, there are very few places you can't go if you use common sense.
Well, and there's also a lot of privilege wrapped up in that. I know there's places I can definitely go that somebody who doesn't look like me would have a very different experience.
Sure.
And I recognize that. But that's the same thing as in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's streets I would confidently walk down in other countries where if I walked down the street that looked exactly the same in the U.S., I'd be like,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, so.
No, I think that's a really good point. All right. So let's put you on the spot with some questions. Favorite airline?
Oh, gosh. So I don't know that I have a favorite airline, but what I love about certain airlines in general is when the airline and the brand get to be a bit of an ambassador for the culture or the community of a country.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I really love flying Swiss First, which is, you know, challenging to do these days, but there's such a nice balance between like this precision of things and then that tradition of Swiss hospitality. It's like it's very warm, it's very welcoming, and still very polished. So we flew them and it was January and, you know, they were, of course, they're pouring the champagne and they're giving you the menu and they're saying, we have amazing selections. Our chef is very good. He's like, but it's winter, so you probably want the fondue. And it hadn't occurred to me until he said, I was like, you are right. Of course I want to have the fondue. And, you know, little things like that, or, you know, flying Thai, where there's so much attention given to the, it's like almost attention is given to just the service. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily the most polished, or, you know, it's not as precise as some of the other airlines, but it's, again, it's very representative of Thailand and their culture and their values. And
yeah.
I love when airlines get to do that, regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, you brought up the Swiss example, and I think one of the, and I do love Swiss. I also feel like, I think Austrian's another good example of, you know, something that's similar in precision to, say, a Lufthansa, but introduces a level of warmth and personality, that especially for me with kids, I found very engaging.
Right, right. And it's differentiating. And, you know, I love that Austrian, you know, one of the great things about Austrian business class is they have this expansive coffee menu. Because,
yeah,
of course, you know, they're a Vienna-based airline and you've got that culture of, you know, the coffee houses. And I love that they're bringing that in.
Yeah.
You know, anything like that.
Yeah, I love those touches. I do. All right. I think I know the answer to this one. Favorite hotel chain?
Hotel chain. I think right now I really am into Hyatt in terms of the
properties.
That's
where I thought you were going, yeah.
I know. I said yesterday that Marriott and SPG are, I think, dead to me, which is sad. But it's, you know, for the way that I like to travel. And I also, well, I feel like the leadership there has been sort of complicated lately. I feel like we're getting back to where they're listening.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And that seems all of hopeful.
All of that statement.
And there are things that I really love, and I think you're probably in a situation too. You know, when they first rolled it out, a lot of bloggers and other people were very, like, meh about things like the Hyatt Guest of Honor program, because they're like, I don't understand the value of this. I don't understand this is going to benefit me. But for me, where I'm someone who I travel a lot, I collect a ton of points, I really love being able to have the option of, like, let me just book this for you so that, you know, for that family member, that friend who doesn't get to travel as often.
Right.
So that you're getting to have this really nice experience, and, you know, I know that you'll be well taken care of, and I like being able to share in that way, even
I do
if
too.
I'm not on the trip.
Yeah, I do too. I love that. And I would say that the Guest of Honor benefit with Hyatt is one that I use frequently. I do really like it. And, you know, I agree that there are some things about Hyatt that I may not love today, but I do think it's moving back more towards the hotel chain that most represents the things I want from a hotel chain.
Exactly. I think when I think about Hyatt and just, like, what are the things that I want from a hotel chain, and what I'm not really loving chains at
sure.
this point in my life. And
right.
so I appreciate that there's a little bit more diversity of the properties.
Yeah, I like the diversity of the properties. And I think also, too, I think it's fair to say that I would give Marriott and SPG an NA for a score right now, because I just don't really know what it's going to look like from a elite loyalty standpoint in 18 months.
Right. And I think that's probably they'd agree with you.
Yeah.
Because
it could be great. It could be
right. They're going to have a bajillion properties across 31 yeah. brands. And I just don't know that you're going to be able to control for the experience.
Yeah.
In the same way.
All right. So next question. And I absolutely know what your answer is going to be to this. I should just answer it for you. But
yeah, why do you even need me on this podcast?
Well, because you're much more engaging than I am. All right, so I will ask an answer, and then you can tell me if I'm wrong. So I'm gonna ask Tiffany what her favorite credit card is, and she's gonna say, "Well, what is it for?" Because she's not gonna have a favorite. She's gonna have the Swiss Army knife of, "Well, look, I've got 15 of them, and I'm gonna apply the 15 to these 15 things." Am I right?
Yeah, you're okay. Exactly right. And I think that's actually really important. You know, the number one question I get in the rest of my life, once people find out what I do, is like, "Oh, well, what credit card should I be using for travel?"
Yeah, that's not a narrow topic at all.
Right. Well, and it's always like the dentist assistant. And you're like, this is really not convenient timing. But let me direct you to onemileatatime.com where we answer these questions and more on a daily basis. Because I think it really depends on what you want to do. Like for me, I get a ton of value out of my Amex Platinum card because I spend a lot on airfare.
Sure.
And those 5X points add up really quickly. You're probably in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how to leverage those and utilize them to get really great value out of those. It's not the card that I would recommend for somebody who wants to be taking that, like, Thanksgiving trip to grandma with their kids.
Sure. No,
you know, like in that case, you need something different. You need something that's going to get you a better value for domestic travel, something that's going to even a cash back card. I know that's a very bad word in miles and points.
I think it's a great word for the right situation.
Yeah, for the right situation. But, yeah. You know, it makes me so sad because, you know, we also have the consulting business and where people are like, okay, so we're ready. We've been saving up our points. We're going to take this anniversary cruise. We're starting in Athens. We're going to end in Rome. It's going to be a great time. We're taking 10 people and, you know, all our kids and their spouses. We've got 5 million Capital One points. And and you would think that if you had 5 million of anything,
right,
you would be good to go. And so it's hard to be like, okay, like, have you already paid for your cruise? Because what you need to do, like, we're going to use those points for your cruise and we're going to get whole different points,
yep,
for your airline because,
yep,
they're just not going to help you with what it is you want to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's funny because I think you'll have a similar shriek to what Summer had with a similar thing that I brought up in one of our podcast segments. But I don't have an Amex platinum or gold card in my wallet right now.
Personal or business?
No, neither.
Do you have nothing that earns membership rewards points?
I do not have anything that earns membership rewards points.
Well,
can you believe that?
I'm not going to panic, but I feel like Ed, we need to talk about this. Like, I know how much you spend on airfare.
Yeah.
So you're getting...
So Tiffany and I are going to have a side topic, a conversation about this when we're done, or a Miles to Go segment where like Summer has...
Like a credit card intervention,
yeah,
I think, Miles to Go topic will be. Now we'll know what it should be.
Yeah, like,
there are many people in your situation where it's, mm-hmm, like, okay, show me what's in your wallet. Like, okay,
right,
this is a good card. This is a good card. This is a great card for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like most people are earning the wrong points for their situation. I would not have expected you to be one of them, Ed.
I'm throwing it out there. I'm as honest as I can be. All right, so we got one more question before you beat me up on a different podcast segment, or maybe just in general. And I know you're very well traveled, and while I assume there are still things left on your bucket list, I've got to imagine it's narrower than mine. But what's one place that you haven't been to yet that you're just itching to go to?
Okay, so I'm not going to specifically answer this in terms of place, but I want to tell you right now, it's going back to what we were saying earlier, where everybody has different ideas of what aspirational and luxury travel looks like for them.
Yeah.
And right now, my biggest commodity in life is time.
Yeah.
I have all the miles. All the miles. So anywhere
she's
I want
got
to go,
all of them.
I do. I've got all the miles and all the programs. I've got like 5 million miles right now or something. It's ridiculous. So I have the miles and the points and the resources to probably realistically do anything I would want to do. What I don't have is the time. So the stuff that sounds really appealing to me right now are things like taking the train up to Tibet.
Oh, yeah.
From Guangzhou, and just spending like that time on the train in the country and that whole experience of, you know,
yeah,
of the train and the isolation, spending like a few days hiking around the old tea plantations in the mountains of Sri Lanka. Like that's the...
I love these ideas.
The kind of thing that appeals to me right now more,
yeah,
than necessarily a specific destination, but I am very intrigued at the moment by places that aren't necessarily conventionally luxurious.
But very experiential.
Yes, that are hard to get into, harder to get out of,
mm-hmm,
require a lot of thought and effort, and then... let you experience the world in an entirely different way that you would generally get to do.
I love it. And I couldn't think of a better place to put a full wrap on this because I just think that that's a great summary of how you see the travel world and how a lot of us see the travel world, these experiences and how experiences can be so much more valuable than things. And I will end our life with a suitcase full of wonderful experiences.
Oh, that's very sweet and lovely.
So when you're not on the podcast with me and potentially berating me about the American Express membership rewards program in a few minutes, where can folks find you?
The best place to find me is on onemileatatime.com. We have the Ask Lucky forums there, or Ben and I do read every single comment that's posted on the blog, for better or for worse.
Every single comment, and that's a big number.
And you can also find me on Twitter at TEBFunk.
And then she's a great Twitter follow, guys. Awesome for Twitter follow. I love having fun with you. Your sarcasm matches mine so wonderfully. All right, guys, that's a full wrap this week. Hope you'll tune in next week for another interesting episode of the Now Boarding Podcast. Until then, see you later.